So he said, if you don't believe in yourself, nobody's going to believe in you. And, you know, day by day, I started opening up a little bit more and more, and to the point where it was, like I said, those guys became like my brothers. And in that aspect, what they taught me was that athletics is a healthy way to deal with things internally.
Welcome back to another episode of the Union Pitchside Podcast. I am Adam Kahn. This is a special episode we are bringing you today. Last time we talked with Matt Freeze and his mom, and this time we want to go a slightly different direction. But first, I just want to remind you, if you are following this podcast, please rate, subscribe, share this pod with all of your friends, family, relatives, acquaintances, anyone who might be interested to learn more about what goes on inside Philadelphia Union. We've got some more really great pods coming up. I'm going to talk to a couple of the coaching staff. I'm going to talk to some players. We've got some really fun pods we did from the start of the season with some players, and then some more current. And we're going to give you some more inside looks as to what's going on here at Philadelphia Union as the season ramps up. And when you're listening to this, you're going to be right up near the top of the Eastern Conference standings. This is a team that has defensively been one of the best in the league and has found offense from a number of different sources. Kasper Schebelko against Vancouver, showing that you can find goals from almost anywhere if you push the right buttons. And Jim Curtin has done that this season. And of course, in back, you are seeing the Union cover for the absence of Kai Wagner, who was suspended for 2 games for a red card. You are just always seeing new guys step up, and that has been one of the themes of this season. And if you watched the Jim Curtin mic'd up that came out recently, if you didn't, I encourage you to. It's one of the better things I've seen this season come out of the club. It really highlights how the message this year is to not be a team that makes the playoffs, but to be a team that gets a home game in the playoffs, to bring a home playoff game to Philadelphia, to the fans of Philly who have wanted it for so long. But we'll get more into that in the future. This is, of course, a special edition of the podcast. We have a club that was really founded by fans, and one of those fans recently got a chance to see his first ever Union game live. That was the last second win against FC Dallas when Alejandro Bedoya finished off an incredible pass from Elsinho to get the win at home. And watching that one was a man named Anthony Watson. He was born in New Jersey, and he is now an Olympian representing Jamaica in the skeleton. Skeleton is, if you know luge, it's basically luge, but you're going head first. I'm really not giving it full credit for how difficult it is, but you're going downhill at incredible speeds in an ice chute head first. With, as Anthony tells me, your head is 3.5 inches above the ice. If that sounds fun, it sounds fun to me, but it also sounds absolutely terrifying. But he got a chance to see his first Union game. He's been a fan of the team since they first existed. And as a club that really, really focuses on community, he's someone that I really want to talk to because his story is incredible. He used to be a runner. He was in track and field. He went to University of the Arts right here in Philadelphia. And then after an injury, just knew that he wanted to compete at the highest level somehow, found his way into the Winter Olympics representing Jamaica in skeleton. And the story of how he goes from being a young man that played soccer, that really found value for himself and for others in friendships and in team sports, and how important team sports became to him, and how much he pushes sports as something that can really enrich your life and show you the best in other people, how he went from that to being an Olympic athlete and really just spreading a message of positivity. It's an incredible story. It's one I didn't fully know before I sat down to talk to him. This was sort of a spur-of-the-moment thing. And so I hope you enjoy this. It's a really incredible conversation. Stick around for the whole thing because just to hear his message and gain a little insight from someone who really believes that sports can bring out the best in people, it's a refreshing thing to hear. And he had just come from meeting some of the players, from meeting Marco and Ale Bedoya and was just impressed with what great guys they were off the field and how they took the time to speak with him and, you know, after training, just sit there and talk about their experiences as athletes and how you really take the good from sports. And something that can be, you know, all about money, it can be all about ego, and finding other people who just value it as an activity that can bring people together, I think was a special thing for him. And also he talks about what Ale Bedoya and Marco Fabian would have to do if they wanted to do a skeleton themed goal celebration. The guys have already done basketball, already done baseball. So if they want to do skeleton, Anthony lays out exactly how they could bring it to life in this interview. So just going to play the interview now and hope you enjoy it. And we'll be back with a regularly scheduled Pitch Side podcast next week. Thanks so much. Again, rate, subscribe, share with all of your friends. Thank you so much for tuning in. This is Adam Can. Follow me at Adam T. Can on Twitter. Producer AZ on the buttons and knobs. Take it away. This is my interview with Anthony Watson, Jamaican skeleton racer. Anthony, tell me a little bit about how you ended up in this position. You're a huge Philly sports fan. You race skeleton in the Olympics. How'd you get to this point in life? You're right here talking to me about Philadelphia Union. Give me some of the backstory.
Well, before getting here, you know, I was born and raised in the tri-state area in South Jersey. So anything Philly sports related was like really big going up in school and high school. And you know, when I went away to college in New York, but then I came back and graduated from the University of the Arts in Philadelphia. So I've always been close to Philly and a huge soccer fan because I played soccer in college. And when the Union got a team, or when the Philly got a team, you know, like that was just like bread and butter to me. But I grew up not really having much. And have, you know, battled like a lot of setbacks to get to where I am now. But a lot of people look at me sideways and they're just like, how in the world do you get all of this stuff? And it's like, I just ask. So, I mean, like, you know, I was a huge Phillies fan. And so I reached out to the Union team and I said, I'm a diehard fan, you know, who competed in the Olympics and have been watching you guys faithfully, you know, for the past 6 years. And, you know, I've never been to a game. Is there any way that, you know, like, can you tell me, like, how that's possible?
Yeah.
And then, you know, they went out of their way to really make my first game special. And, you know, it like, and that to me was like the complete package, because I've been a fan, but I've never been a complete fan because I've never been to a game. And now that I've been to a game, now it's like, now I feel like I've done everything that I need to. And hopefully I get to come back to more when training and, you know, competition season wears off.
So tell me this. I have a couple questions. So the first game you came to was the April 6th Dallas game. Is that right? So Ale's goal at the end? Is that?
Yep. And I was like,
so where were you when that happened?
I was watching from the suites upstairs, and but was standing outside on the deck because like that's how intense it was for me, especially since we were down 1-0 for like a good majority of the game, and then saw like everything from like the penalty kick, Corey Booker's penalty kick rebound goal, and then you know, then the other goal afterwards, the second goal afterwards in the last minutes of the game, and I was like, thank you. I was like, you guys have literally not only given me a game, but my first game ever was the dramatic comeback at the last minute. Yes. And I was like, I don't think it could be written any better than this. So I had the time of my life. I was there with my two best friends. And so I was there just enjoying soccer, enjoying community, and enjoying like my favorite team.
So tell me this. So Ale did a baseball celebration that time. Marco had already done a basketball celebration. You spoke to Ale today at training. Did you ask him to do a skeleton celebration in the future? And what would that look like? How would he, if he was to bring that to life, if he listens, how would you bring skeleton to life as a soccer celebration?
Oh, man, I really, like, there's a perfect way to do it, too, and I didn't ask him to. Darn, if I could get...
He's around here. We might see him again.
Yeah, if I see him again, okay, simply it's this. All he has to do is pretend he's pushing a sled with one arm, locking it down and run, and then all he has to do is just penguin slide on his stomach and then just get up. That's it. So, I mean, like, they've had all the bobsled celebrations, and frankly, that's getting old, but can we get skeleton in there somewhere? Dang, I totally forgot about that altogether. But, I mean, I met some awesome Olympians today as well. So, I mean, like, to see, like, to see how the Olympics, you know, like, how the Olympics has further outreached, you know, because Olympians, literally, their whole, the whole task of an Olympian is to promote, you know, character, education, and promotion of, like, health, wealth, and happiness. And that's the task we're given. And to see Olympians that have competed in past Olympics here trying to use their sports knowledge and their mental awareness to make athletes more aware, more alert, and more aggressive in competition, but more on the conservative side of aggression and everything else to actually be, like, upstanding athletes. It's just, like, that's I'm like, that could be me someday.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the goal, right?
So, yeah,
so,
totally.
So tell me this, and you started with soccer, and I'm curious how you got into soccer. Why? It's coming from South Jersey. But then how did you get from there to Skeleton represent Jamaica?
Well, I picked soccer because I really loved running. So, like, growing up, you know, I did basketball just because that was the main sport in the inner city that I grew up in. But I was bullied very badly from the age of, like, 8 to the age of, like, 14, to the point of, like, suicidal attempts as a teenager. And I finally got past that when I was a part of a team. So, like, in essence, you can say sports saved me, you know, and being a part of a team where a body actually cared and actually pushed you and actually, like, helped you get mentally tougher to deal with those kinds of things, you know, was why I really fell in love with the game. And being on a field with people that I considered brothers, you know, always brought the best out of me. And being able to be, you know, in different levels or in different games or in tournaments with people that I knew on the field and off the field had my back. That was, you know, what really kept me involved in soccer up until I couldn't play it anymore. And, you know, I had a really bad knee injury. I had a slight tear that turned into a full tear in my lateral meniscus tendon in my right knee. And then I went to track and field after that. But then after running track and doing soccer and having an injury that severe, when I came back to track and field, I just wasn't as fast. So I sat down one day in the summer of 2012, went through every single USA team page because I was determined to be an Olympian for some sport, and then saw that bobsledding and skeleton was the only one that took tryouts at the time. And so I signed up. And then at the end of that year, I chickened out and didn't go. So I went 2013, and from 2013 to 2016, competed for Team USA. And then after that, switched to the Jamaican team, and then made history as the first ever skeleton athlete in Olympic history that went to the Olympics for Jamaica.
Wow, that is a story, man. So when you hear Jim Curtin or someone say that, you know, we don't need some superstar. What we need is a team that plays as a team and acts as a unit. That has special significance to you when you hear sort of that being the way that soccer is portrayed as something where all these guys are working for one thing, working for each other.
Oh, absolutely. You know, because I've heard it from professionals and from industry people and from people who are in high positions of influence that they would rather be with someone that's teachable and coachable than someone who's arrogant and thinks that they can do everything themselves, because the whole aspect of team is being as strong as the weakest person. So not that everyone has to become that weaker person, but they raise the standard of strength to the rest of the team by helping them. And when you have someone that's constantly trying to, you know, detach the chain and be their own little league on their own, you know, it's like they can't function. And then it goes beyond sports. It goes into the locker room, then it goes into personal life, and then it goes into, you know, like, how things are handled that way. And I've been a part of teams where that's been the atmosphere, and it's not functional for anybody. Right. So when people say that, you know, like, and when I see it, because I see the chemistry between these guys, you know, like, they push each other. They push each other hard.
Yeah.
And, like, sometimes I get nervous that it's just like, wow, that's, like, a little too aggressive. But then, like, you know, after a hard play, like, they'll pick each other up, dust each other off, and then after practice, it's handshakes, high fives, and hugs.
Yeah.
I'm like, that is an environment that's set up for success. And I'm really excited to see how far the union go this year with that kind of environment.
So let me ask you, if you don't mind talking about it, and if you don't, then we'll just cut this part out because that's what we can do. But when you said that you started soccer when you were in a pretty low place, and then you talked about the whole team being only as good as the weakest player on the team, was there a point where you had to sort of reckon with that and say, like, I may feel like I'm the weakest player, but I still have something to contribute, and these guys can lift me up, and then I can do the same for the next guy coming in?
Oh, right, totally. I was 13 when I committed to soccer full-time. I had played from the age of, like, 8 until about 11, okay. And then took a year in between, because that's when, like, emotionally I was just really detached and really kind of, like, lost into myself. And I remember playing for a club team, and one of my friends sat me down. He was 15, And he told me, he was just like, hey, man, he's like, we're doing good things, but we want you to come with us. Like, you can't be here to yourself. He's like, we're a team. So, you know, like, and he sat me down. He's just like, so tell me what's going on, you know, and I just broke down and I told him, I said, look, I'm bullied. You know, like there were it was, I think, 2 years that I went without laughing because I got made fun of for how I laughed. You know, there were days where I would like starve myself because like people didn't like, because I came from a Caribbean household. People couldn't take the smell. They didn't like it. They would always say this. And, you know, like as a kid, it's just like when you get picked at for everything, you know, on top of the physical abuse that you get sometimes, it's like it literally shuts you away. And so he was like, you know, you're here, you do the bare minimum. But he said, we can't go any further than what you can do, because lo and behold, one of us can't step up. They're going to call on you next. And if this is what you bring to us, he said, then that's not going to help anybody. So he said, if you don't believe in yourself, nobody's going to believe in you. And, you know, day by day, I started opening up a little bit more and more. And to the point where it was, like I said, those guys became like my brothers. And, in that aspect, what they taught me was that athletics is a healthy way to deal with things internally, because you don't take it out on people, but like the whole aspect of pushing yourself when your mind thinks that you can't, or telling your body that it can when it wants to put out, or telling to pushing yourself that much further so that you help other people and, you know, collectively with yourself achieve something. You know, like that's what sports taught me, and that's what my teammates taught me. And, you know, like I gave my best from that day on, and, you know, it helped me get a scholarship my freshman year of college before transferring to an art school. But, you know, I credit everything to my best friend from that time, and we're still close. And, you know, like it was, I think, one of the greatest joys to tell someone that saw me when I felt like I was nothing, to tell him that I'm going to an Olympic Games where I'm going to be, you know, like doing what I love and hopefully using what I've been through to inspire other people to do that. And so, you know, I credit everything I have. And, you know, like a lot of people, you know, don't really see the value in that kind of community and athletics, because everyone is just like, you know, some people get lost in money, some people get lost in contracts, but, you know, me as an Olympian, you don't get paid for nothing, you know.
Yeah,
you do everything comes out of your pocket, you know. And so when you have to pay for everything, and sometimes, you know, like when, like I said, when I can't afford anything, like that's when my training stops, and like you have to try to get things together so that you can continue training. So it's just like I've pushed myself through a lot of circumstances to get to where I am, but, you know, like I don't see anybody now as less than. When I see people that aren't putting out, it's just like I was taught to see it. It's just like, you know, to see beyond the athletics, to figure out what's mentally going on so that they can be all in when they're at practice and in games.
And yet you're doing an individual sport now, but there's a team aspect to it. You say you got coaches who are watching around the turns. Is it strange having sort of come through as a team sport and then being something now where you are the individual who is the only one that goes out and represents all those people that put in work for you?
It was definitely a change, because I went from having people that I was actually competing with to doing everything myself. But just because I didn't have teammates didn't mean that I didn't have a team, you know. So I mean, like the situation and the view might have changed, but the team aspect was still there, because I had a coach that was dedicating time to making me a better athlete. I had a medical team that was dedicating time and resources to help me stay in shape. And, you know, like I had friends that, you know, weren't on my team, but I had a community of people that were always pushing me to be better, because I was, you know, like told, you know, in my lowest days, it's just like athletics are supposed to change you internally, you know, and from your internal change, that's when everything around you starts to change. And so, you know, that's, I'd say it definitely changed a little bit, but, you know, no athlete ever gets anywhere by themselves, you know, and that I'm a firm believer in that.
And you told me earlier one of your best friends at the Olympics was from Ghana, right? And so that's why you were kind of excited to see David Akam here. Yeah. I saw you meet him earlier.
Yes.
So how did that relationship develop? How do you make friends with these other Olympic athletes who are there?
Well, I mean, like it kind of starts, you know, like as, like I said, as being individual, like, you know, you're there doing your own thing. But when you tour with the same people, because we're in seven, eight countries every season, you know, Canada, United States being, you know, two of the dominant countries that we're always in. Then, you know, there's Germany, Switzerland, Latvia, Austria, you know, Norway, and now Korea, now Japan, and soon China when their track opens. And so when you're around people all the time, you know, you kind of spark up friendships and, you know, like you find training partners or you find people that you start traveling with. So my best friend from Ghana is a Kwasi Frimpong. And, you know, was born and raised in a, you know, with eight other siblings in a one bedroom house. And, you know, like I didn't have that upbringing, but, you know, like I grew up with similar circumstances. And, you know, our first day of training camp together, I sat down, he came in, you know, we started a conversation. And then from there, we were just best friends. And, you know, other than the people that I'm close to, it was an honor telling him that, you know, like, hey, you know, we started rookie camp together. We did world championships for the first time for our countries together. And now we get to go to an Olympics together. You know, so that was, so I mean, like, so anyone from Ghana, especially David Akam, you know, I was a really big fan of his, watching him play before he came to the Union. And when the Union acquired him, I was really happy, you know, and being able to meet him today and tell him that, like, hey, you know, like, my best friend comes from your country. And, you know, like, a lot of good things are coming from Ghana now. It's all really surreal.
And to be able to sort of say, like, hey, you're someone who came from the same place and you've also achieved great things athletically. And it's just great that you can sort of connect those two people.
Exactly. And, you know, I'm a firm believer that, you know, in excellence, because, you know, nowadays everyone wants to put a gender, a race or a color behind excellence. And, you know, I don't really think that way. You know, to me, excellence is a mindset that everyone brings to each task. And, you know, the people that are dedicated and faithful to seeing that through are the ones that in turn get opportunities to showcase that in greater arenas in front of more people, not for personal gain. It's nice to be compensated for that, but more so because you probably ask anyone there, you know, they probably say that they're doing it to motivate other people where they come from. And to me, that's honorable.
And so how did you end up sort of making the move to Skeleton? You look down the list, you see everything that's available. Mm-hmm. You end up doing Skeleton. You get out there and actually start training. What, give me a sense of what that's like at first. I mean, that's like, it's like diving in a pool. We don't know what water is, it seems, you know?
Yeah, basically. So I had no idea what Skeleton was. I mean, like, I tried doing some research on it and saw, and I was like, it looks easy. But to me at the time,
Wait, it looks easy? That was your thought when you saw people flying down the hill?
Well, I mean, like, I didn't see any video. There was no video footage. Okay. There was no video footage then. I mean, like, I grew up without internet or Wi-Fi, so I had no access to it. I was literally going in blind.
Okay.
And had no idea. So, but, you know, I remember my very first run, like, we went to the track. They take you from a significantly lower start in the track so that you don't kill yourself.
Okay. Nice of them.
Yeah. And so, like, my coach, he said, give me your ankles. He laid me on my sled and he shoved me in. He didn't tell me what to do. He just said, see you at the bottom, and threw me in. And, you know, and when I got to the bottom, you know, like, I was all hyper ecstatic, energized. And, you know, I was like, all right, I want to do it again. And then, you know, like, as the weeks went on, we got further and further till we went to the top. And then, you know, after that entire schooling and elite athlete selection experience, the coach of the U.S. team at the time that I was under came to me and said, you're everything that I'm looking for in an athlete. You've got potential to actually be an Olympian. He's like, we want to invite you back here. And, you know, I stayed with the U.S. team for 3 years, and then an opportunity came up to represent my father's country, and they had never had a skeleton athlete before. So, you know, being able to represent my father's country and make history as the first ever to do something like that, that was really cool. But, you know, like, I go back to that moment where it was just out of curiosity, like, I wonder what this is. So, like, I had no experience, no knowledge, but, you know, but like I said, I wanted to be good. So every day at training, every day in the gym, every day, like, you know, in recreation, I was smart, you know, like, careful and, you know, conscious to make sure that I was doing everything I could to make good decisions to get me further and not set me back.
Dude, you had never seen.
I mean, I knew what bobsled was, but as far as skeleton, like, nah. I had to learn what that was.
Dude, that's because I remember. So all right. So let's jump back in real quick. Give me the description for people who haven't seen skeleton before of what's happening. Like, what is it like? How fast are you moving? And what's actually going on? Just if you haven't seen it live, because when you told me you were jumping in blind, the first time I saw Skeleton, I was like, that looks amazing. I bet if I was at the top of that hill, I would be peeing my pants.
I was like, everyone has that moment sometimes. I've had that experience sometimes, because when you first start, you only start at a certain amount of tracks. When you start getting better, you start traveling more to different tracks. And if you've never been to a track before, that's when everyone kind of gets those nervous feelings of, because each track has a different amount of curves. Some have chrysals. A chrysal is when you enter a curve, it does a 360. and you exit going the same direction, just at a higher speed, lower or higher in the trek. Some curves, you know, like go the same direction for a certain amount of times. And like as an athlete, when you get to a certain place, you have sometimes 5 days to 6 days, three training runs to learn a mile and a half in about 55 to 50 seconds. And you have to memorize all of that before race day. So, you know, for people that don't know what it's like, it's like you're laying on a lunch tray with your arms tucked underneath your thighs, and you lay flat on your stomach that way with two metal rods going down and you going on the bottom, and you go up to speeds. The fastest speed that I've been clocked at was 88.7 miles per hour.
And this is head first.
Head first. Clear. Head first with your face and chin literally 3.5 inches off the ice. It's very noisy
because you're wearing
a helmet, and it's very noisy inside because you know, like all you hear is just like you're sliding on ice, so it's just like all you hear is
right
the entire ride. And like when you stop hearing that, that's when you hear nothing. That's when you know you're going to hit something hard because you've left the ice. There have been times where, you know, like when I've slid when I was learning certain tracks, you'd hear and I'm like, eesh.
That's like when you just know you've, all right, I've left.
Yep. And then it's just like you just and the sad thing is if you tense up to take a hit, you're going to skid and potentially flip and crash. So literally you have to take hard hits like that relaxed. But hey, I mean, like, it's a good life lesson. You know, don't tense up when life beats you. You got to just be relaxed. Be relaxed and take it.
When I was doing boxing training for a little bit, the same thing they tell you. It's just like you got to keep everything from your mental all the way to your physical just loose and relaxed. Throw the punch, it's got to be loose.
Yeah, but, you know, and I don't know what it's like to be a fighter. I mean, like, I think if I was a fighting coach, I would tell people just like, look, like, we're training you to be the best, but you're going to get hit. Don't think that you're not going to get hit.
Yeah.
And we don't want you to, like, because people sometimes are so scared of crashing that when they hit and they crash, they don't know how to mentally come back from it. I've crashed several times. And, like, I just get up like it's nothing. And people are just like, you don't feel nothing? I'm like, no. I'm like, now I've experienced the full thing. I was like, I've experienced, you know, personal records. I've experienced fast twist times. I've experienced good curves, bad curves. And now I've experienced a crash. I'm a complete athlete now.
Yeah, yeah. Then touched every point you can touch on that whole trip. So, oh, man. So one of the things I wanted to ask you when you were describing that, and like how fast you're going, and you're 3 inches, 3.5 inches off the ice. And one of the things they always talk about in soccer is when you're making the move up the ranks, especially to that like top professional level, like someone Brandon Aaronson just did this year, the speed of the game, the speed at which you have to think is so fast that it's really hard for most guys to adjust. And that's why there are only a few elite athletes in soccer, is that they can think, they can sort of see the world around them and think fast enough to respond. And you're saying you have to memorize this track. You're moving up to 88 miles an hour down this track. How do you get up to the point where you're thinking like one step ahead, where you can anticipate the next curve? And does it take a while to get to that point?
Yeah, it takes it. I mean, like, yes, it definitely does take practice and you know, time to get used to that, because like literally, like, there's literally no time to think. If you're trying to take time to think in an environment that I do, it's just like that's where you start hurting yourself.
Yeah.
You know, so I mean, like, I definitely do think that there's a definite difference between people that are learning as opposed to people that just have a knack for it. And I was told that I had a knack for it because I do what most athletes spend their whole career trying to do, and that's nothing. You know, like, I've literally crashed. And then when I watched the video, I saw the lines that my sled was taking with me off of it. And it was doing way better without me on it than I was doing being there.
Yeah.
And seeing that, it's just like, you know, I had a German coach for a short time, and he literally would make me do, like, I think max you're only allowed to do 3 runs, because after like your third run, because you're under five G forces of pressure on curves, and like when you have to keep your neck straight and do and like see where you're going, and sometimes you just can't, your face just gets buried and you just have to feel when you're coming off and then time it just right. And the only way you learn how to get it perfectly is by getting it wrong all the other times, you know. So it's like you have a split second to be like, now, and if you do it too early, too late, you know, like it's either hit left wall, hit right wall, you know. But he would make me do 8 runs a day.
Yeah.
To the point where my neck got so loose. I literally was like a dead man on my sled because I just had no strength in my neck to keep it up anymore. And he was just like, you see how relaxed you are? I was like, I'm not relaxed. I'm exhausted. He's like, well, you need to be exhausted more. He's like, because look at your lines. You're perfect here. You're not doing anything here. And you got a faster time when you're exhausted than when you are doing that. So, I mean, like with all these young guys coming up and, you know, like with any athlete anywhere, it's like when you get to big leagues, you know, like that's why I really don't like put hype on like especially like college basketball or college football athletes.
Yeah.
Or because like when you get to the pros, you're against people that have been doing this for a career and you're just a rookie. And it's just like they can sense things, they can predict things. It's like speed chess. It's like the way you line up, the way you post, the way you do this, people can already tell where you're going, how fast you're going to run, when you're going to be there and time their hits accordingly. And
yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
So it's just like it's the same thing here. When you get to a certain level, it's like everyone here, they don't think. They just do it. So it's like, you know, if you're going to be a thinker, spend more time developing until your thinking turns to natural.
All right, Anthony, I've kept you for a while, but I want to know what's coming up for you. If anyone listens to this and then wants to follow your career, what's coming up next? Because next Olympics, 2022, is that right?
22 in Beijing, China.
All right, and so what comes before that, before you get to that point, before you make the run for that point?
Well, right now I'm currently crowdfunding and raising funds because, you know, like being an Olympian, you know, we don't get paid to do what we do. And, you know, like that's why, like whenever I meet Olympians, you know, like I have a deep respect for them and I have a deep respect for any athlete. But I mean, like to be an athlete where you don't get paid, but you have to put in the same amount of energy and training that these highly paid athletes do, you know, just for a chance to have someone support you to get that much better in your craft. You know, like that's real dedication right there. So I'm training and I'm going to be heading out for off-season camp soon. And then from there, from September until March of 2019-2020, I'll be training and racing in Germany, Latvia, Switzerland, Canada, the U.S., and France. And then going to Germany for world championships in 2020. And then from there, 2021... world championships will be in Lake Placid, which was the first track that I ever started on and spent 3 years dedicating time just learning there. So I'm really excited because, you know, like I'm really wanting to do my best on that track and do everything I can the year of 2022 to qualify and go back and make history again, hopefully as the first Caribbean medalist.
Be the first Caribbean medalist if you medal, huh?
Yeah, the very first. I mean, like, I was the first black athlete in skeleton, my friend and I.
No kidding. I didn't know that.
No, it's a European sport. So, I mean, you know, and, you know, you don't really see many people of ethnicity, you know, like, doing winter stuff. So, you know, when me and my best friend from Ghana were doing skeleton, you know, like it was definitely easy for us to stand out in most places,
yeah.
You know, and, you know, we got support from that, but we also got a lot of heat from it too. But, you know, we keep pushing on and, you know, like I keep pushing myself because, you know, I want to show that, you know, like excellence and success, you know, it's not segregated. It's for anyone that wants to be the best that they want to be. For that time or for whatever it is that they want to be in, you know, and to anyone that might be hearing this, it's just like if you have a dream, you know, like sometimes it's only ever going to make sense to you and you got to be the person that no matter who's supporting it, who's trying to throw water on it, who's trying to, you know, like put doubts in your mind about it, you know, like you have to stay dedicated to see it through for yourself and not for anybody else. So that's my advice.
Anthony, thank you. It's been inspirational talking to you.
Oh, well, thank you
really
so much for having
the time.
Oh, no problem. Anytime.
And, we're going to go from this and try and find Andre Blake right now.
Okay. I'm
right.
Excited.
Thank you.
Thank you.